gang. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, rbnrepublicbroadcasting.org. It's part two of free speech. Part one was the Constitution. Oh boy, that was fun. Do you remember that? Those were the good old days. And part two is RBN. So go to republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the donate button. See the myriad of ways to contribute. For instance, you can get your Boomer checkbook or just a money order from Piggly Wiggly, our hopefully new sponsor, or just a well-concealed cash. Stick it in the envelope. Write RBN 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Oh, wait. There's more. You can call in your credit card or debit card donation to Mike or Julie or Sam. They'll take your money. And here's the phone number. You ready? Write it down. Get your pen out. It is 1-800-724-2719. Did I get it right, Jeremy?
Yeah, extension 3.
Extension 3. Okay, it's almost there. Who says you can't teach an old dog new tricks?
Right.
Well, this is part two, which gets broadcast the following day, but it follows shortly on the heels of part one. In part one, we took some callers. And one thing I want to say, there are people who want to say that every shooting or everything is fake and staged. Things can be staged. It can happen. But when you go around saying everything's fake, if that's just going to be your knee-jerk reaction to everything, you really got to prove it. And prove it to a level that the people you want to convince are going to accept, not just say it's true, it's obvious. Here's the thing. Our society is really, really messed up in a lot of ways. So, for instance, when you go out to the strip mall, are all those fat people, are they crisis actors or are they actually fat? When you see all these white women walking around with mulatto children, are those just like rented kids or are they really going out and having a lot of whatever it is that makes these kids? There's really a lot wrong with society. It's falling apart in so many ways. And the idea that with, you know, obesity going through the roof and coal burning and divorce and all these other things just going through the roof, that some things like maybe trannyism or shootings, there's no way those would increase naturally. I just don't get it. Am I being unfair, Jeremy?
Well, we could also look at the train derailment in Palestine, Ohio, and a lot of people said that was staged. In that situation, I think it's really obvious that it's just the product of our failing infrastructure in hiring, affirmative action to the railroads, cutting jobs. You had the railroad strike in 2022, and you have these overworked, you know, the good people that are there in the railroad system, they're overworked and, you know, they don't have any days off. They're treated very poorly. But, you know, you're going to get a lot of problems with skipped maintenance. And so, yeah, so I think it is very reasonable to see a lot of these problems in our society as just a failing society, a failing infrastructure.
Yeah.
And why is that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got a failing physical infrastructure, like you were talking about, failing social, infrastructure, and also just, why is it? I think it has something to do with having a ruling elite that has a hostile relationship with the people it's governing. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Would it be fair to say that this ruling elite, sometime or a lot of times you can just see these incidents as a result of the failures of society and technology, a country that once was great, and that sometimes you do have the elites intervening and planning and staging things. It could be a combination of the two.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell the top and the bottom.
Yeah, we had one of the callers yesterday point out to me that the Biden cabinet is full of Jews, which was news to me. I'd never heard that before, and that the media was run by Jews. That proves that everything is staged.
The Biden cabinet, Patrick, as I understand it, is full of Chinese Jesuits.
And Freemasons. Yeah. Well, how could it be Jews? And you know, here's the thing. Honestly, like Kanye West, he's funny. I think he's very funny. And he saw that Jonah Hill movie and it made him like Jews again. Honestly, I don't need to see the Jonah Hill movie. This will come as a shock to people, but I'm actually being serious. I never stopped liking Jews. You know, I've met lots and lots and lots of Jews, and most of them I don't find objectionable. As a matter of fact, I don't find them on average more objectionable than most other people. I really don't, in terms of personal relationships. In terms of group behavior, I stand by everything that I have said over the past dozen years or whatever that I've been on air saying these things.
You could say that about, you know, blacks as well, or Hispanics. Maybe people know blacks or Hispanics that are good people, and maybe that run good businesses. But yeah, you're talking about group behavior. And so I sort of react to people. All right, so I react to group behavior differently than I react to individuals. So if I'm in St. Louis going to the Irish pub and I see a group of black, you know, gang-looking people, they're all sagging on the sidewalk, I'm going to go to the opposite sidewalk. I'm going to avoid them because I know about group behavior. But I'm going to react differently to individual blacks, let's say like a black that's in my small town that runs a barbecue shop. I'm going to react differently to that person, right? Because I understand the difference in individual traits and characteristics as opposed to group behavior. So, but similarly, if I'm on that street going to the pub and I see a bunch of white guys with their pants sagging, you know, they look like wiggers, and they're acting like the gangster culture, I'm going to avoid them too.
Mm-hmm.
So, right? But then if I see a group of people with like Metallica t-shirts on, if I see a group of young people that are headbangers, I'm probably going to interact with them and I'm going to walk up to them.
If one's got the Metallica and then the other one's got the AC/DC and they're doing that headbanging thing, that would be cool.
I'm going to walk up to them and I'm going to say, wouldn't you agree that Ride the Lightning was the best Metallica album of all time? And we're probably going to get into conversation because you know why? Headbangers aren't violent. Headbangers don't do, as a group, talking about group behavior, you know, they don't do that thing. They're usually just white guys that like hard rock music. And they like to wear ripped jeans and be kind of hard looking. But gangsters, they're going to want to, you know, carry out that lifestyle that the Jews have implemented in society to trick blacks into thinking that they could be alpha males as being gangsters. And so whether they be white or black, I'm going to react accordingly to their group behavior. Did that make any sense? I tried to be coherent there.
I think it makes plenty of sense.
I would approach a group of headbangers. I would not approach a group of wiggers.
Yeah.
Or black gangsters. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, I hear that there's a new Patrick and Jeremy commercial.
There is. This commercial is based on clips from some of our greatest guests. We've had the best guests of any alternative media talk show. Well, we have David Duke, Kevin McDonald, Ryan Dawson. Hey, Zyklon T, who's yelling at the Xbox right now. You guys can hear him in the background. Warren Baylock from Fascination. How about Brother Nathaniel?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Actually, it's so many guests that they couldn't all fit in one commercial, so we had to make two commercials.
We did. So I put together the clips and you edited them because that's your forte. You have the technology. And I understand we have two commercials ready to go.
We have two. Shall we play them now?
Let's do. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button, like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Wow, that was fun. Okay, so here's one thing. So you had sent me a bunch of clips, and for the most part, I was able to use them. I cut a few things out. And, but also there was one, you know, there was one with Ryan Dawson where I had said something about 9/11 and then he had his response. And I wound up taking out that part of what I said about 9/11 because I didn't think it was clear enough what I was saying. But more than that, I just happened to stumble upon a clip that you had sent me for our first commercial that got left on the cutting room floor. And I picked it up and I looked at it, and it was me saying, to evaluate politics or our society without looking at Jewish power is like trying to do physics without considering gravity, something like that. And it was better said. And that was from a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, whenever we did that last commercial. And you know what I thought? I thought, okay, this is one of my very, very most fundamental core things. Why I couldn't express it right now is beyond me. But it's one of my very core beliefs, my core opinions. Why did I cut that out of the last commercial but leave in that joke aimed at Mike Rivero about cicadas? Why? That doesn't make any sense.
Because the cicada joke was funny, and we got to have some humor. Right?
I get, yeah.
Well, you know how Kanye West was being funny when he said he saw that Jonah Hill movie and he doesn't hate Jews anymore? That was funny.
I think that's very funny. I think it's very funny. So, some people don't get it for some reason. I don't know.
Oh, I got it. So similarly, it's funny that, you know, Mike was going against the cicadas and you're calling him out on that. It's not the cicadas, it's the stink bugs. Because the stink bugs have cameras, nanobot technology, and it interacts with the nanobots that you inject in you if you take the vaccine from COVID. Yeah.
Well, you know what else was funny about that?
What's that?
Was the way that commercial started was you said something like, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Dr. Patrick Slattery. It's like this, you always have this real nice introduction for me, like I'm Batman, right? So there's this big deal introduction. And then what do I say? Come on, Mike, get off this cicada kick.
Yeah.
Or anti-cicada kick. Get off your, come on, Mike, get off your anti-cicada agenda.
Yeah, you're saying something that's humorous, And there's a contrast to me, at introducing you instead as,
instead of something that's deep and thoughtful and academic.
It's a humorous contrast. It's like a Caravaggio, piece of art, where he does a lot of dark backgrounds and light front grounds. Yeah. It's a contrast. Did you know that I knew about art history? You didn't know that, did you?
No, I didn't. I actually didn't.
Yes. I'm a student of history and art history. Anyway, the new commercials are very good. So you just touched on a little bit of the one where you substituted, you talking about Jewish power. And then Ryan Dawson pretty much tells us what happened with 9/11.
Equal it with the anti-Semitic remarks.
As you should. Dancing Israelis, yeah. Dancing Jews, yeah. Dangling Jews. So then there was a second commercial. Are we gonna air that second one?
I thought we already did. Well, let's air that second one.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, LGBTQ, RS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What? Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, no. How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Well, that was fun. What happened? The things we did put in a lot of work into this, because I'm sure it was a lot of work for Jeremy to find the clips. It's something that I wouldn't have done. And then it took me at least a few hours to get it cut down and balanced out to make two commercials that are going to be exactly a minute long. They got to be 60 seconds long, so had to get everything edited right. But it's important because people are going to hear these over and over and over again. So we want them to be fun.
You mentioned Gilad Atzmon, that very infamous quote.
You there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You mentioned the Gilad Atzmon quote.
David, hey, I tell you what, for the interest of a fun show, shall we get David on here for a second?
Yeah, bring him on.
Okay, let's bring him on. Okay, let's do that. I got to figure out how to do this. And I'm good at editing things, so this may or may not stay in the show. So let's see if add people. Add, come on, let's do this thing. And one ringy dingy. There we go. Hey, listen, Jeremy and I are recording our show for tomorrow, and you are our surprise guest. What's up?
Well, what was up was I was just giving you a call because I just found out. I was going through some of the things today, and today the United Nations voted on a resolution to investigate the Nord Stream pipeline bombing. And one of the greatest, by the way, ecological terrorist attacks in history, by the way. And it seemed like that would be something that people wanted to investigate, wouldn't it? I mean, it's a pretty serious thing. They were alleging that it was a terrible thing that Russia did. And they voted 3 in favor, Russia, China, and Brazil, and all the rest of the Security Council against it. Oh, my God, what kind of world are we living in? I mean, really, what kind of...
To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Every move he makes, another chance he takes. The odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number, hadn't taken away your name. Beware of pretty faces that you find. A pretty face can hide an evil mind. You say, or you will give yourself away. The odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number.
China, Brazil, and all the rest of the Security Council against it. Oh, my God. What kind of world are we living in? I mean, really,
I'm going to utilize my prerogative or exercise my prerogative and have the last word on this.
Go ahead.
That's kind of an inside joke between me and Jeremy, because that was something that got cut out of the commercial we just made. We made a commercial for RBN. Anyway, that sounds really interesting, just not funny. What do you think, Jeremy? Is it funny? Is it interesting?
Yeah, it should be. I mean, here's my whole thing. Our commercials are focusing on the great guests that we've had, and David Duke has been one of our great guests. And one of the great quotes that you included in the commercial was David Duke saying that, you know, his awakening focuses on how race drives history and how we focus on the Jewish question. As a result of that.
Yeah. So that's included in our RBN commercial, and it's going to be repeated day in and day out, probably for years. So there you go. It's a plug for your book.
Especially One Race. That's kind of funny in a way. It's unbelievable in a sense. One Race has been driving certainly the last 100 years of history in many, many ways. And I guess in some ways that's a backhanded compliment to them in terms of their power. If only the power would be used for good, not massive war like the wars we faced in this world.
Well, seriously? That's actually a real interesting point. What if it was used for good? What if they were actually serious about Tikkun Olam? Is that how you say it, Tikkun Olam?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I don't know the pronunciations very well. But if to heal the world. But it's just like the Old Testament Ten Commandments. Of course, we're all familiar with the Ten Commandments. And I read about this in my awakening, and it was a very interesting. When I learned about how the Ten Commandments was written and the love thy neighbor stuff that's in the Old Testament, I said, well, that's pretty nice. You know, that when I was a kid, I thought, well, that's wonderful. The Israelites were believing in love thy neighbor. And then later I found out when I got a little older, specifically from Jewish publications, Jewish writers, Jewish commentators, they pointed it out to their fellow Jews and constantly that love thy neighbor, and they showed the Hebrew and the rest of it. Love thy neighbor. A neighbor was defined as your countrymen, your brothers in your nation, your ethnic group, your race, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so one of the interesting things about the Ten Commandments, another scholar that I read was pointing out that the Ten Commandments in Hebrew was written in those days in the history. They had no punctuation points between the sentences. I kind of like you had to figure it out, I guess. But the interesting thing was that with no punctuations, if you read the Ten Commandments, it says thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not lust after your neighbor's wife, something like that. And you shall, do anything else against thy neighbor. So what they were really saying was, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not.
Oh, all about regarding your neighbor. Jeremy, yeah. You are our
that's what makes sense to me, too, by the way. When I read all that in the Old Testament, I said, well, I'm reading about all these wars and these mass killings. And remember King David, no relation. First name. But anyway, he killed a lot of people, right? I mean, he put the, to get somebody's wife, he put the people on the front line, right?
I was going to ask Jeremy, because he's our resident biblical scholar. So yeah. Regarding the Ten Commandments, and punctuation was something that's actually a pretty recent development in most languages. It certainly wasn't, there wasn't punctuation. What about that? The idea that thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, would relate
because it goes just, to the neighbor. Way, you see in the end,
just the way, say, coveting your neighbor's donkey or wife or other things. What about that, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, it was written in Hebrew. They don't have vowels. They had like jots and tittles, but. So the thing is that, yeah, David Duke's correct.
What are
jots and tittles? Sorry? It's
what are
like,
jots and tittles?
Telling you the actuation, like how to pronounce words.
Okay.
Right. It would be like little points of how to pronounce words because they didn't have vowels. They only had consonants. But no, I mean, Dr. Duke's right. The Jews did, they were very racially, ethnocentric in that. They didn't charge usury to each other, but to non-Jews. And so that kind of carried forward into Christianity. In the New Covenant, Christians wouldn't charge interest to each other. They would treat each other as preferential. And, when you had the Jews living in European society. Christians wouldn't charge interest to each other. They wouldn't, they would treat each other as preferential. And, you know, when you had the Jews living in European societies, the kings would usually rely on the Jews to do the interesting. And, because, you know, they would exercise that, that thing where they wouldn't charge interest to other Christians. So yeah, it is very ethnocentric, you know, in its practice, just as Dr. pointed out.
I have two other questions.
Well, I'll get some follow-up on that, though, before we go to another question, if you'd like.
Okay, follow-up, and I'll write the question so I don't forget it.
Okay, so I knew when I was a young man looking at all this stuff that the New Testament offered a new covenant that included salvation for all and a lot of changes from the old. And, you know, a few years after I was baptized, I don't mean too long a story here, but I was baptized in more of a fundamental church. I reread the Old Testament in light of the increased understanding I had of the Jews. And I recognized its radical ethnocentrism. And the Old Testament describes the history of one nationality, one people, the Israelites, who were designated as special people, a chosen people. The life and death struggles, I remember all, you know, between the Israelites and the Canaanites, the Philistines, the Amalekites. My God, it just went on and on, right? Exhaustively. But anyway, as I mentioned in my chapter on Jewish, supremacism in my book, My Awakening. In fact, we just sold another Jewish Supremacism today on, believe it or not, eBay for $100. Kind of crazy, but that's another subject. But anyway, as I've mentioned, I was surprised and dismayed when I was reading about the genocide that continued, and I continued to find these more verses in the Bible. And so when you told me this point, I pulled up this quote, and I want to give you this quote, because it's a powerful quote, and this is an interesting understanding for people, right? So the Jewish forces committed their genocide under strict guidelines and I'll give you the quote in a second, to set aside the lands that had become Israel. You should exterminate every inhabitant, while people in surrounding nations had to die unless they submitted themselves to be slaves to Israel. And this is the quote exactly from Deuteronomy, because I just looked it up. When you draw near a city to fight against it, offer terms of peace to it. And if its answer to you is peace and it opens to you, then all people who are found in it shall do forced labor for you and shall serve you. But if they make no peace with you, you shall put all the males to the sword. But the women, the little ones, the cattle and everything else in the city is spoil, which you should take as booty for yourselves. And you shall enjoy the spoil of your enemies. Thus you shall do it all and do this in all the cities which are very far from you, which are not cities of the nations here. But in the cities of the people that the Lord your God gives you for inheritance, you shall save alive nothing that breathes, but you shall utterly destroy them, the Hittites, the Amorites, Canaanites, and the Perizzites.
Isn't that the doctrine of holy war?
Something like that. Deuteronomy 20:10-10. Okay. Now, so the wording was unmistakable. So, and I thought this was strange because I remember, you know, the love thy neighbor stuff. So in my earliest Sunday school days, right, I've been taught that the greatest instruction of God was to, quote, love thy neighbor as thyself. That's in Leviticus. I don't remember what number, but it's there. And, you know, so I grew up on the Ten Commandments, which are the best known passages of the Old Testament. And I wondered how the Old Testament genocides, killing men, women, children, everything, raping them, taking them as sexual booty and all the rest of it, how does it stand in the light of thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not cover thy neighbor's house?
So now, it's a matter of whether they're your neighbor or not. Is that what we're getting it to?
Well, we're getting it to right now. So I looked up the scripture that discusses loving thy neighbor as thyself. So it was in Leviticus. And in that standard revised Bible that my grandmother's, I found these words. And this is another, I got these quotes. I just looked up these quotes. You shall not take vengeance or bear grudge against the sons of your own people, but shall love your neighbor as yourself. Leviticus. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against your countrymen. And this is in the Hebrew text, but bear a grudge against your countrymen. Love your fellow as yourself. That's from the Jewish Tanakh, right? Now, in the Old Testament, if you want to get it, so.
Yeah. And I do have some other questions. And
well, here's the exact wording of the Old Testament at the Ten Commandments, which might be a good way to close this subject anyway. So I talked to this guy at the time, a pretty famous historian, and he had a lot of knowledge. His name is John Hartung. I met him, when I was Europe years ago. And so he was extremely good scholar. You could look him up probably in Wikipedia. And he explained the Ten Commandments legal prescriptions, or proscriptions, I should say, were directed against offenses against the neighbor, which excluded non-Israelites. So this is what he, this is how he showed the quote without the punctuation. Thou shalt not kill, neither shalt thou commit adultery, neither shalt thou steal, neither thou shalt bear false witness against thy neighbor, neither thou shalt covet thy neighbor's wife, and thou shalt not desire your neighbor's house, his field, his manservant, his maidservant, his ox, his ass, or anything that's your neighbor's. Pretty clear, isn't it?
Right.
So who are the Israelites prescribed from killing? Thou shalt not kill thy neighbor. The children of thy people, the sons of your people, your
fellow
Israelites.
That's clear. And we were in the middle of this show, and so we only have limited time left. We're actually recording the show. I just want to remind you.
Okay.
Hey, here's something. I want to ask Jeremy first, but you can weigh in too, Dr. Duke. Judaism existed for, I guess, some centuries before it got written down. It was originally an oral tradition. And in its earliest form, was it monotheistic the way we think of it? Or was it just that the Jews had one God? Not that they were saying there only exists one God, but that they themselves only had one God. Is that the case, or is that a misunderstanding?
I think.
I'm not sharing first, if you don't mind.
I think there's a lot of references that there are other gods, though, and it's kind of a contradiction in the Old Testament because you shall have no other gods before me, right? And I don't think they were talking about something else, but obviously monotheism is worshiping one God. Yeah. I think that's what it actually meant, not that there were devils in the world or powers in the world. But there was
so,
one.
Is that your understanding, or is there a different understanding?
Religious things are so controversial. I hate to even make a, you know.
Hello.
Well, in the Old Testament, you know, you have in Genesis, you know, let us make man in our own image. You have different references to the Trinity in the Old Testament. The New Testament really reveals the Trinity, but it's one God in three persons: Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. That's the Christian tradition. And so the Jews don't acknowledge this Trinity. They only acknowledge God, or what they call Yahweh, or YHVH, whatever. They don't acknowledge Jesus Christ, the Son. That's a strictly Christian tradition, that we acknowledge the Trinity. Three persons, one God.
It is really important, too. The only one last thing I can come, I don't want to get a big religious study all the time. I don't like the fact that people get so divided by so many things. Dr. Slater and I were talking about, you know, it doesn't matter what our stand is on abortion, of course. It doesn't matter. But they divide us all on abortion while, you know, they destroy the votes of people that could stop immigration. Because if they disagree about some other particular point, they'll vote with a certain other party. And I see Christians divided all the time. And I see a lot of the wars of, many of the terrible wars of European history between different religious denominations and groups. And, it's kind of a tragedy. And it's very different than what Jesus Christ taught. And that's who I follow. And he taught love and peace. And he didn't say that. No Christian didn't say that we shouldn't defend our homes, our, you know, lands, our farms, our countries, our people, our women, our children. But at the same time, you know, I think he would be revolted for the idea of killing each other because of a different interpretation of some scriptural text.
Okay. And Jeremy, did you have anything you wanted to add to that, or should I go on to the next question?
Just to summarize, when the Lord Jesus Christ walked the earth, the Jewish establishment had their own man-made religious system, which was not God's law, and it oppressed people. And Jesus Christ offered a release from that oppression by trusting in him, and it was a religion of love. He died for the sins of mankind, and he rose again. And so that's where I would differentiate, is that he stood against the Jewish establishment in offering love and sacrifice.
That's true.
Okay. Hey, I have another.
And now, wait, I got one sentence here that's very important, I think, to add to that. Yes, he did, but he also made really clear that he came to bring a new law, literally. And he constantly, during his ministry, told people, like a guy's working on his house on the Sabbath, which is a really big thing to the Jews. And Christ asked him, you know, it's the Sabbath, you're working. And the man said, well, yeah, but I needed to repair my house, you know, whatever the reason was. And I need it for my family. It seemed to be the right thing to do. And Jesus Christ said, if only the other people were like you in this faith, right? Mm-hmm. Because he said, so Jesus just repeated that it's not the law. And Jews are famous for the law. That's what the Talmud is. It's the halakha. It is the law. And and that's where the strength and the power and the horror of Judaism mm-hmm. goes on.
Okay. And
so there's no question there was a new covenant that Jesus
brought. Yeah. So the next thing I want to ask, and this could be within the religious doctrine or just historically, how much history has there been of Christians enslaving other Christians? Is that a thing?
Well, I think no. There has been slavery, but you got to go back to the midst of time. There's certainly been cases where you capture their armies and you put them to work and all that kind of thing.
I guess if you had slavery in Britain and
you actually had slavery in America to a degree. You had people basically in the prisons and all, then they were enslaved. But sometimes it was forever, you know.
So it's not really a prohibition on a Christian enslaving another Christian. Jeremy, is there any kind of prohibition like that?
Jews have that, but I don't think Goyes have that.
The New Testament outlines basically if you're and they don't use slave, like servant is a better term, because like when we say slave, we think about like Hollywood, black people being
in chains all the time. Even the blacks were never in chains in America hardly after they got settled.
So, I mean, in the Roman Empire,
they did something illegal or they might get in chains.
Yeah.
But they didn't wear chains. Now, when whites were captured by the corsairs in North Africa, they lived in the dungeons. They were dungeons at night, locked up in chains every night.
So, Jeremy, Well,
the New Testament was written in the light of like the Roman Empire, and they had servants and slaves. The book of Philemon in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul had encountered a runaway slave named Onesimus, and Onesimus became a Christian.
I can give you the punchline on that one. Go ahead.
Well, Paul basically was writing a letter. Paul was writing a letter to Philemon, who was a Christian, and they were both Greeks. Philemon and Onesimus. Onesimus was his slave. And Paul was saying, look, this young slave has become a Christian. I want you to take him back and do not punish him for running away, because he's one of your brethren. He is your brethren in the flesh. He's Greek and he's a Christian. And so like you had this relationship where it's more like a servitude. It was like you worked for somebody and you lived with them and they provided you food and a place to stay. I mean, that's way different than what Hollywood portrays, like slavery under the black, you know, whatever.
I don't think it's that noble of an institution at all.
Let me just say this one thing first. I'll tell you why I asked the question.
Yeah.
Last autumn, Dr. Duke, I'm sure you remember, and probably Jeremy remembers too, I was talking about this professor at Yale University named Tim Snyder, who teaches what he says is the only Ukrainian history class in the country, or one of two, something like that. And one of the things he said, he was talking about Yaroslav, I think that was his name. He was a Kievan Rus king who adopted Christianity. And Tim Snyder said, well, I mean, he adopted Christianity so he wouldn't be enslaved, because basically people don't enslave their fellow religious, you know, their co-religionists. They don't do that. And I thought, really? Is that true? And I don't know if there's, I don't know why he said it. He said a lot of things that didn't sound right.
What did he say again?
He said that the reason, so I think it was Yaroslav who at that time, the Kievan Rus were.
You're talking about Yaroslav the Wise.
And I believe that's who I'm talking about.
About the 10th century, something like that.
And at that time, the Kievan Rus were pagans, but he was kind of shopping around for a official religion, and he did. He had contact with Muslims. He had contact with Roman Catholics. He had contact with Orthodox. He had contact, supposedly, with Khazars as well, Khazar Jews. But he went with Orthodox Christianity, and Tim Snyder's explanation is, well, because he didn't want to be enslaved, those were the most likely people to enslave him, but by adopting their religion, he therefore...
Did he say Khazar Jews himself? Or did he say Ashkenazi Jews?
I don't remember what Tim Snyder said. I do remember in my own textbook from 1980 on Soviet history, they specifically mentioned Khazar Jews, and that was my first exposure to Khazar Jews. Yeah. It was a textbook by the last name was Wren. It was published maybe around 1980, 79, something like that.
Yeah, that was kind of popularized a lot by.
Well, there were Khazar Jews. It's the question is whether whether there's really a connection between them and the Ashkenazis. That's the question.
Bottles piled on high.
Yeah, that was kind of popularized a lot by.
The question is whether really a connection between them and the Ashkenazis. That's the question.
Yeah, well, they certainly might have had some conversions, but we don't even know the extent of it because
there's enough there that they existed, but there's not a whole lot there. You know, there's some letters between some Khazar scholars and Sephardic scholars in Iberia, and there's just not a lot there. But anyway, we are actually running pretty close to the end of the show.
Oh, good. Well, I enjoyed being with you.
Yeah. And Jeremy, did you have any thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, I appreciate you joining, Dr. Duke. Always good to interact with you.
Well, Jeremy, you've got a lot of knowledge, too, and you're quite a biblical scholar yourself. And it's pretty, you're very intelligent and you're very, very well read. There's so many people who are Christians that don't even know what the Bible says. They don't even realize the New Testament, that you would be put in prison in many countries of the world for using the words that Jesus Christ used against the Jews and his actions against the Jewish bankers, which was the only times that he was ever violent.
Right.
He overturned the tables of the moneylenders. You know, it's like overturned the tables of Goldman Sachs. I mean, it's pretty interesting.
There's a balance there, isn't it? The same Jesus that said, turn the other cheek and love your enemy, is the same Jesus that drove out the Jewish banksters with a whip. So, I mean, you know, we've got to apply this correctly.
Yeah.
And there's a
cord of many strands, is in the New Testament, which is like a cat of nine tails.
Yes. And Jesus also said, if you don't have a cloak, or if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. There's a time for defense. There's a time for self-defense. There's a time for peace.
And almost every Christian church in the history of Christianity, in terms of the Middle Ages, we're not talking about modern times in the last century or two, but we've seen men in armor. You know, they have knights in armor with swords and pitchforks and the whole bit, you know. It's really pretty interesting. So there's a different reality than what the Jewish media has made out to us of even Christians' own religion, and they don't even realize that they've been lied to and they've been conned about a lot of things.
Okay. Well, it's been a fun show. I want to thank you gentlemen for joining me.
I was going to start telling some jokes, but we're out of time.
Tell a joke.
I don't know any jokes. No, I was just talking about the joke. You know, I definitely want to make a whole bunch of historical things and then have my laptop and bring it to a Jewish shop. And maybe when they give it publicity and they find out and they break the code in my laptop, they'll learn all the truth about the Jews in the world. But it was to be too late because it's already circulating all over the world because it was such a big news story. David Duke's laptop.
David Duke's laptop. Okay.
Yeah, they wouldn't find any cocaine or underage girls in it or anything like that, but they would find truth about the Jews. So that would be kind of funny in a real sense. We could really make a big deal. They would think they really got me. They're going to get me now. But
That sounds like fun. We're out of time, except it reminded me of the story that we were going to do, but we didn't do. Which is about January 6th tapes finally being released to the public. But anyway, that will have to be on another exciting episode of National People Radio.
collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit RepublicBroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.